you for standing by. This is the conference coordinator, and I just need to remind all parties that this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I'd like to introduce Ms. Stephanie Vega. You may begin.
Thanks, Kathy. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's Jazz Open Mic session. The topic is SCM and components in Rational Team Concert. First off, my name is Stephanie Bagot, and I work for IBM Rational as a technical support engineer for Rational Team Concert and Jazz. Today, our speaker is John Camelon. John is one of the initial members of the Jazz Source Control team and has spent the past 4.5 years writing the server code for Jazz Source Control. Previous to joining the Jazz project, John was a committer on the Eclipse CDT project, responsible for writing parsers and language tooling to support searching and refactoring C and C++ code in the Eclipse IDE in support of Rational tools like Rational Software Architect. We will be having a web conference today, and you can join by signing on to www.webdialogs.com/join, and the conference ID is 3133836. Again, that is webdialogs.com/join, conference ID 3133836. If you are unable to join in on the web conference, please listen in on the phone. John will be sharing his knowledge throughout the hour, but all the lines are open, so please feel free to jump in and share your questions and ideas. And now I will introduce our speaker, John Camelon. Go ahead, John.
Hello, Stephanie. Is there an audio bridge number I'm supposed to type in to record here?
Nope, that's okay. You can just go ahead with the web conference.
Okay. Okay. So I'd like to thank everyone for joining me here today. As Stephanie introduced me, I'm the technical lead of Jazz Source Control, and I've been working on this project for pretty much since its inception. And we've done something a bit different with Jazz Source Control compared to some of the other SCM systems that exist out there. And I think that this is a great opportunity to try and dive in a little deeper and talk about some of the concepts of how components are, what their role are in Jazz Source Control, and how they can be used effectively. As I said, people often ask me questions saying I have used some other systems like CVS or ClearCase for years, and how does the Jazz Source Control, how do the concepts in Jazz Source Control map onto concepts that I understand and that I'm successful with in my day-to-day routine? And so I guess in order to answer this properly, I would start first with the fundamentals, which is the concepts of workspaces and streams and what the difference between them are. So a stream in Jazz Source Control you can think of it as a shared branch, as like a team resource where people collaborate on. And it's basically governed by the process rules and the rules that we set up for administrating the project. A repository workspace is a personal branch where you as a developer do all your work. So you make changes in a repository workspace and then eventually share them with the greater team in a stream. The repository workspace allows for you to control exactly the granularity of when you decide to take in your teammates' changes. And what that does is it allows you to choose the exact level of isolation that you have, that you can take everything as they come available, or you can continue working on what you're working on and then choose to accept those other changes later. Repository workspaces are loaded into a file area on the user's local disk. And then you use either the command line or an IDE of some sort, Visual Studio, Eclipse, what have you, to make changes in those files. Once you make changes in those files, you can create what is called a change set, which is the atomic structure that all of our jazz source control is based upon. And it describes an atomic change between a before and after state of a set of files and folders. Users create change sets in their repository workspace by checking in changes. And when they wish to share them with a larger group, they choose to deliver those changes to a stream. And when users wish to update their workspaces, they accept changes from streams. So the fundamentals here are: users check in changes into a loaded workspace to create a change set, and then they deliver those change sets to a stream for other team members to accept. So the three fundamentals are check in, accept, and deliver. And that's the main actions that we have in Jazz Source Control. So that's the high-level view. Now, more specifically, the workspaces and streams themselves do not directly contain the change sets. Even though we talk about you work in a workspace, the workspace is like a container, and it actually contains something that's a little bit more segregated. Components are the means of segmenting the workspaces and streams into smaller pieces, which allow for greater granularity and control. So a workspace can contain lots of components, each of which can be updated individually or in unison with each other. And what this allows is it's a formalization that you're letting Jazz Source Control know that you expect your source code artifacts to either be produced or consumed at this granularity. And what that does is it allows us to tailorize our UIs and our workflows to try and make sure that people get specific answers that are interesting to them based upon the components that they're interested on. So individual change sets are actually scoped to a component, and only one component. And so what that means is that if you're changing files that are in different components, it means that you'll create multiple change sets. And the granularity as to what, how to break up your code into components is somewhat subjective, because it kind of depends upon what your team's role is in the greater project and what your project's role is in your company's projects. From some people's perspective, when they're at the bottom of the stack, all they see is what they work on. And from other people's perspective, people at the top of the layer cake, they see absolutely everything, and they think that perhaps the perspective of the granularity would be different depending on what you work with. So the benefits are is that components, they provide additional isolation, right? If you know that you only work in component A, perhaps you're less likely to just accept changes for anything other than component A. That you can wait until you're in a good state before you accept those changes. Now, if the components are extremely granular, you'll have to create more and more change sets in order to make a logical change across them all. So that's not a problem for some people, but for some groups dislike that. And the coarser the granularity, the less isolation you have from each other. So you can think that when you put all your source code into a workspace, you start with one component and you can have maybe 200 folders in the root of that component, and that would be conceivably good enough, and it may be good enough. But if you find that people in these different folders actually never really interact with each other and that their work doesn't necessarily impact each other on a day-to-day basis, then perhaps there's an opportunity there to break these folders up into, make each one of those folders a component and allow for a little bit more isolation so that way people can choose to perhaps work with less in their workspace or load less or deal with a coarser granularity of change from components that they don't necessarily work with day to day. So what this comes down to is about trying to understand how it impacts the history within a workspace or a stream. Since change sets are scoped to a component, then each component in the workspace or stream has a distinct history. And what that means is that in our presentations in the command line and in Visual Studio and Eclipse, we will show you a history of a component. And that we don't show an overall history of the whole workspace or stream. And if you get to a point where you think you've made a bunch of changes to that component and you want to capture it for other people to consume at a larger level, you can create a baseline off of it. So a baseline, again, like a change set, is scoped to a component. But if you want to capture a state that's larger than a component, than an individual component, you can create a snapshot, which is basically the equivalent of saying an aggregate baseline or a composite baseline, multiple baselines together captured in a snapshot. Now, snapshots are important because they kind of represent a total state of a workspace or a stream. And it's what we use in Jazz Build to capture the state of a build, so that way we can always go back and reproduce that build. And aside, users can create snapshots, right, and associate them to a stream as kind of a reminder to themselves as to where they were or where they need to go again. So, for example, on jazz.net, there's lots of snapshots. We run probably, in the Rascal Team Concert Project, we run probably 50 builds a day between all the different groups in Rascal Team Concert. And every 4 weeks or 6 weeks, we have a milestone. And when we actually declare a milestone as successful, we take that snapshot and promote it. We associate it with one of our most important streams, so that way the users, the developers on the project can always know where to look and find a snapshot if they want to compare their current work against something that's been stable and something that users are likely to encounter. So for every milestone, M1, M2, M3, we will have a snapshot which captures that state. So that's the basic principles as to what we have in Jazz Source Control. And now I'd like to switch to Eclipse Client. And the idea here is that I've connected to a test server using the Eclipse Jazz Source Control Client, and we have a bunch of projects here that I've shared in to different components. So this is my workspace. I'm going to show presentation here. My repository workspace, it's owned by me, and it contains three components in it: client, server, and testing. So you can think that in a client-server type application. Perhaps the client team wants to work with a stable state as to what the server team provides them, because perhaps the protocol between the client and the server is something that can break quite easily, and that they want to make sure that when they do accept changes to it, that they do it at the right time, the right granularity. So you can think that, well, this team, the client team may choose to actually like freeze the server component for a while in their stream and continue just working on the client, fixing the bugs and adding features that they would expect to do. So if I was to look at this repository workspace through the remote repository files explorer here, so you can see that this would be the layout of all the files in the workspace. And we provide this grouping of components here as a presentation aspect to show you. When you load these on disk, they'll all be loaded at the same level, but logically they belong to these components. And what this does is it allows you to, you know, kind of get a sense or an understanding as to how things will load when you choose to actually load them onto disk. So I've made some changes here in my, I've loaded through the Eclipse client, I've actually put this stuff onto disk. So these are files that I actually can modify in the editors. And I've made some small changes here. So the pending changes view is showing that I've made modifications to build.up properties, plugin DE properties, and manifest.mf. And if I double-click on manifest.mf, it will show me the exact change here. I changed this version number from 2 to 3. So when I check in all pending local changes, there's a button here at the top of the pending changes view. What this actually will do is create 3 change sets. And because they're in separate components, they all go into separate change sets. I'm going to give these change sets some names. And then I can choose to deliver them to the stream. So I can choose just to deliver change sets for the client, or I can choose to deliver everything at once. There's a deliver all outgoing. Now, fundamentally, as I said, each component has its own history. So I just set this up so the history is not very long here, but you can see that these are only change sets that affect this component. And likewise, if I show history here, I'll see a different set. So by collaborating through components, what you're allowing for is teams and users to make decisions as to the amount of stuff that they're interested in. If you were to just use one component and put all the code in there, then teams will basically be in a situation where they would have to be more, they wouldn't be able to work at the granularity of something in the UI. Right. They would have changes that they would have to say, oh, there's an incoming change for this folder. Maybe I don't want to accept it yet. But instead, they have a client-server testing type of decoupling, and it's a first-class entity in the UI and in the command line as well. And as I said, you can create a baseline that will capture the complete configuration. Complete configuration of this particular component in this workspace, which then another person could say, replace with baseline. and it would show up in the picker here. So you can give people a change set, which is like saying, here's a particular patch or a fix or a small feature or something, or you can tell them, just take this whole baseline, which will give them everything. And that granularity is helpful as well, because often people will want to have something that's, developers may want to have individual changes that they can just piece together, but often testers or people trying to reproduce problems want something that's a complete representation, and the baseline allows for that per component. If I wanted to capture more than one component at a time, I could create a snapshot. And this, what this does is, we can see here, it created a snapshot and associated it with this workspace. And if I was to browse this snapshot, it'll show that it contains baselines at these, it contains components, baselines for each of these. And I could browse them as well as repositories. So that's the basics, that's the fundamental basics, and I'm happy to show off some more stuff or to answer some questions here.
If anyone has any questions, feel free. All the lines are open. You can ask John.
Hi, John. This is Jim Wade from IBM Tivoli. Are you going to show the relationship to the RTC defects and how they relate to the change set?
Certainly, I can show that as well. So, fundamentally, change sets right now are SCM concepts, and as with most of Jazz, we try and show a linking story that will allow for some more advanced workflows. So one thing that you can kind of do is any change that you provide in the repository, you can either associate or a work item with. You can associate multiple work items, actually. So this is a picker that actually just allows me right now on the fly to to basically associate a change set and create a work item right now. So what you'll see here is that now this change set, instead of just having a comment on it saying second, it actually has a work item that this was just created. Now this work item, it has some merits to it. It actually ties a lot of the actual process between what we have in Jazz Source Control to team process, because you can set up advisors that will allow for requirements on the work item that you associate to the change set. So we have advisors that are like, this change set requires approvals by people on your team that have this particular role, or this has to be associated to a work item that you own, not someone else's work item. So there's restrictions that you can place on it like that. And then when you look at the work item through the work item editor, you can also see the changes there. Coming up. Okay, I'm not sure why that one's not showing up there.
Okay, thanks. I think that shows me what what I was asking. The other thing is, can you make force it as a requirement that they must associate work items with change sets?
Yes, you can. Okay. So there's an advisor I can show you right now. I can't easily configure it because I'm not set up as an administrator on this particular project. See, something's happening to me. I think I'm having some problems with my laptop here, but I'm actually not able to open up. Oh, here we go. Okay. So if you look at the process configuration here, this is a little bit advanced, and I'm not, it's maybe a little bit beyond the scope of what you can do here in this talk, but basically you have the ability to add process advisors onto delivering change sets, either client or server. So right now we have, there's an advisor that's called descriptive change sets, and out of the box, the way in the standard Scrum template, the process template, it will allow for either associated work item or a comment. But we can change this right now, that it say that it officially requires, I just have to, officially we require an associated work item owned by the current user. And then if I switch back to my other user, so this change set has a comment but no work item associated to it, so it should fail here. Yes. So the team advisor view comes up in the Eclipse client here and explains what the process failure was and offers a bunch of solutions that will get past it. So we can say associate existing work item. I can use the same one that I just created. And then when I go to deliver again, oh, it wants it to be assigned to the current iteration. And ta-da, eventually it allows me to deliver.
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
Hi, this is Darren Dunn. I have a best practices question. Let's say I have a fix that I need to put into the current development stream, but I also need to put it into the service stream. Would you recommend creating multiple work items for those, you know, two efforts, or is the single work item with multiple change sets?
I think either way it can work. It kind of really depends upon what your process is. But if your process, As your team can configure your advisors to be either very lax or very strong. And so I know, like, within Rational Team Concert, like, our process is we only create new work items for putting things into the maintenance branch if it really is a separate work. If it's and it needs to be tracked separately, it needs to have different approvals, because often we'll have different rules to contribute to the maintenance branch as we do for the development branch, because the maintenance branch is something that we want to be a lot more careful about, because it usually goes to customers sooner, right? Early on in the development of a release, we don't have the same sort of process rules on the development stream as we do on the maintenance stream. So it's kind of like it really depends upon your individual team's process. I say it never really hurts to have separate work items and link them together, right, and say that they're related.
Sure.
Right? Also, as an additional point of something that if you're making changes in a maintenance branch, and I'm assuming that the maintenance branch and the development branch are related, like that you forked one off the other.
Yes.
So one best practice I can tell you that generally works really well is that if you make the change in the maintenance branch first and then port it up to the development branch, it's usually a lot easier. That you, the change that usually just accepts, or you can accept it right in and then merge it, as compared to if you do it in the development branch and then try and put it in the maintenance, you'll often have to merge it in as a patch.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
So it's a lot easier to go forward than back.
Yes.
This is my point.
And the approvals are on the work item then, not the change set.
Currently, that's correct. And
okay.
I think we've been investigating different ways of trying to put the, not so much the approvals, but the reviews.
Yes.
Like there's an approval type that's called review, and we really wanted to, it's having it separate from change set and putting it on the work item makes it kind of difficult if there's lots of change sets to figure out which ones have been reviewed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I think we're trying to figure out a way to put the reviews directly on the change set, but that's not committed yet in any release.
Okay.
Hi, John. This is Steve from the DSD Russian hosting team. Can I ask you one question?
Certainly.
Yeah, right now this, we have our team hosting the motherboard RTC and RQM in our environment. And then one of the customer requests to delete the stream and component from the RTC 2.0. And then when I, you know, my ID has all the permission, like a chest admin, everything. And then when I right-click that component, I don't have the option to delete. I showed it to Stephanie from the Russian RTC support team also. We did it like a net meeting. And then I already opened the PMR. I'm not really sure what happened on that, you know, project area. My best guess was like that RTC instance was upgraded from RTC 1 to 2. So maybe somewhere around it has something was wrong, or I'm not really sure what happened. So what I did it to our customer, I just changed the ownership and then make it like invisible.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about you want to just delete a component completely from the repository.
That's correct. When I right-click it, there is no option to delete, you know?
That's correct. So I would say that knowing how things are built, components would probably be the hardest thing to delete in all of JAWS.
They're
connected in at lots of different layers. But workspaces and streams, reference components, change sets, reference components. Change sets also reference files and folders, and the files reference content. And to just delete a component is actually kind of it's a significant kind of amount of data that would become invalidated. So I do know that we have a requirement in the 3.0 stream as to that we should be allowing archiving of components, which will get us part way, in the same way that you can archive users or project areas. And we haven't started on that yet, but it's something that I've been thinking about quite a bit, because I do recognize that people make mistakes, or people set things up in one way at one time and then decide that they want to do something completely different, and they'd like to, first of all, not pollute the UI with things that they don't intend for people to use, but then also regain the space in the repository that something may be taking up. And so we're going to try and make some efforts in this space. I won't know if we actually will enable a delete action right here. Right?
Okay.
But
yep.
There'll be something I would expect coming up in 3.0 to help out with that. One thing that's also that's been committed to in the current release is that you're going to have the ability to move projects between servers.
Okay.
Like repository consolidation. And so that's also one other way that you can kind of clean up things as you go, is that if there's a project area that contains stuff that you don't think is being used anymore, you can move it to a less used server, and then it'll no longer be in the one that you want.
Okay,
right.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
So that will be like most likely going to be appear on 2003 or 2004?
I think that's a 3.0.
A 3.0.
3.0. Which is 2010.
2010. Yeah, I saw it like a 2002 is already released. And then I saw the requirement about the 2002 is we need to use the DB2 9.7. Is that correct?
We encourage people to move to DB2 9.7 because it's a better backing database. You'll have improved performance and stuff.
Okay.
I believe we still support 9.5, right? But I think that 9.7 becomes the preferred solution.
Okay, because our environment, we have more around 30 instances running on the 9.5. So, you know, I was thinking about that, you know, for the plan.
Yeah, I think you should still be fine because I know that we, on Jazz.net, we're still using 9.5 as well. So, and we've upgraded to 2.02. So
thank
it
you
should
so
be
much.
Fine. Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Darren again. I know you can right-click on a change set and say locate change set to find it in a stream.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to see all of the change sets that have been included in the stream?
Do you want to see everything?
I want to see all the change sets that have been delivered to a stream.
I would say that you can show history of an individual component, right? And
okay.
there's a limit here. There's a preference.
Okay.
Where it says we cap it at 100 by default in the history view, but you can pump that number up higher. What that does is it will get a lot slower.
Sure.
But if for your purposes, that will do one component at a time, and then you just would iterate through them and do that. We don't have a central, like, cross-component history presentation yet.
Sure. Okay, no, cool. That's what I needed right here. Thanks.
Okay. If you do change that setting, I would suggest that you disable this. Make sure that you don't have link with editor and selection enabled, because what will happen is it will try and do it for every file. And as I said, that 1,000 or 10,000 history entries, it could be a very expensive operation. You may find your client is connected to the WAN or something, and it's constantly working on something that you don't realize.
Oh, okay, thanks.
So I'd disable that if you can.
Does anyone have any other questions for John?
This is Jim Wade again. I've worked with CNBC, CVS, RCS, SCCS, Faircase. How is it stored on the server? How are the files stored on the server? Are they stored in the database, or are they in a file system type structure like in RCS or SCCS?
They are stored in the database as blobs, and
okay.
Basically they're segmented. large content. We have like a certain chunk size.
Right.
And so we can support arbitrarily large content by just having a bunch of chunks together.
Uh-huh.
We delta compress content. So when you do a check-in and you say you're making a modification to a large zip file or something, we're actually only storing a diff of that based upon what our algorithm yields, right?
Okay.
And also everything that's stored in the database, first of all, is compressed. Even if you can't delta compress it, it's still compressed using gzip, using a normal compression utility. And if the same file gets uploaded in multiple, the actual same content is stored multiple times, it actually reuses the same storage in the database. So it's actually keyed by hash and not by anything else. So what this does is we try and minimize the amount of space that we actually take up in the database, right?
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
At this point, before we're going to start concluding the session, we're just going to do a quick survey poll to everyone. Kathy, did you want to go ahead with that?
All right, thank you. At this time, we are ready to begin the polling session. There will be one question. After the question is asked, please respond by pressing the star followed by the appropriate digit on your phone. You will hear a tone upon making your selection. And please respond after the question has been read. The question is, how useful did you find this call? Press star 1 for not useful. Press star 2 for somewhat useful. Press star 3 for very useful. Again, star 1 for not useful. Star 2 for somewhat useful. Star 3 for very useful. Okay, please respond at this time if you have not.
Okay, John, if you wanted to go ahead and conclude the session, or if there's any last questions for John, please ask them now.
Okay, thank you very much, everyone.
I do have one last question. Is where this was being recorded, where can we find the recordings? Will that be posted?
Yep. If you found the link about this open mic on DeveloperWorks or on jazz.net, there will be links on there to the recording as well as the session recording, audio and video. Or if you want, my email is sbagot, S-B-A-G-O-T, at ca.ibm.com, and you can send me an email, and I can send you the recording later on today when it's posted.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. If no one else has any questions for John, I guess that will conclude the session for today. Thanks, everyone, for attending, and thanks, John, for speaking.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.